Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We're going to talk a bit about China, but also a whole host of other issues, many in the economic warfare arena. With our duty expert on that portfolio, his name is Kevin Freeman. Kevin is, of course, the host of his own superb television program, Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. You can find it at CRTV and Blaze TV, among other platforms. He has been the author of three terrific and I think now best-selling books, one entitled Secret Weapon, another Game Plan, and most recently, According to Plan. You can also follow his great work at economicwarroom.com. Kevin, so good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be with you.
Kevin, I guess I'd like to start with your take on what has been developing in communist China in recent days, namely in response, at least in part, to the COVID lockdowns, the so-called zero COVID policy of Xi Jinping, mass demonstrations across the country, now being subjected to intensifying repression by the regime. But what do you make of the evidence that's now pretty much unassailable that the regime is in trouble, perhaps economically as well as otherwise?
Well, the only way to overcome a totalitarian regime is with absolute mass turnout in force. And that's what we're seeing happening right now. The regime is in trouble because they're not going to be able to keep up the economic growth, which was the only thing that kept them in power, that and their totalitarian ways. But the masses, you know, if you promised a better life, you stick with us and you're going to make more money and you're going to improve your economics, that's one thing. But you stick with us and we're going to lock you in your home, or we're going to lock you out of your home, or we're going to keep you from your job, or we're going to cut you off economically. That's what they're facing. It's a very difficult thing for minority, the Chinese Communist Party, to completely control, you know, so many people, over a billion people that are not members of the Chinese Communist Party and really not benefited by the regime at all.
And yet, Kevin, as you know very well, the surveillance state apparatus that the party has put into place with their millions of cameras and their social credit system, the digital gulag, if you will, and, of course, the powers of the state ministries, intelligence and the police and, of course, the People's Liberation Army are all, you know, at the disposal of that minority. And you're absolutely right. It is a relatively small portion of the population, 90 million, I think. Do you think there's a chance that the masses can, in fact, take down the Chinese Communist Party and Xi Jinping's emperorship, if I can use that expression, something that they've, in some cases at least, explicitly announced is their goal?
Oh, they absolutely could. With American support, with the world's support, they absolutely could take down the Chinese Communist Party. The question is, will they receive the support that they need? We've seen in Iran, we've seen in Hong Kong, we've seen in multiple areas in recent years where there was an uprising demanding freedom, liberty, individual liberty, and they were ultimately put back down without the world's support. This is the time for America to stand up and say, we believe in these things. This is the time to end the Chinese Communist Party for their totalitarian brutality. I mean, the human rights violations by this regime are off the charts. And if we can make the American people aware of it, they will side with the right side. And if the right side is sided with, yes, absolutely, there's a chance.
Well, that's a hugely important point. And so far, we're seeing nothing from the Biden administration to speak of. I mean, maybe a platitude here or there, but essentially, I think it's reminiscent, really, of what George H.W. Bush did to his great infamy, namely after Tiananmen sending his national security advisor off to assure the Chinese communists that it would be business as usual. I mean, it may not be quite that overt, but it does seem as though that's the message they're taking away from it, which can only embolden the Chinese communists in their repression, no?
Which is extraordinarily important to realize that Tiananmen Square was when China was relatively weak on the world stage. Here, they're an existential threat to liberty around the planet through their Belt and Road Initiative, their hacking, all of the things that they're doing through unrestricted warfare. They're a direct existential threat to the liberty of the planet. And so if ever there were a time to stand up, it is now.
Amen. And one of the ways that we can stand up, even in the absence of the government's leadership, regrettably, a deeply compromised government of the United States by the Chinese Communist Party at the moment, is through withholding our money from further investments and well, life support, I would argue, to the Chinese Communist Party. You've participated briefly in a program that we did this week, a Financial War Council, we call it, to sort of examine ways in which some of the things that we've been working on, talking about on this program and yours and elsewhere, Kevin, for quite some time now, could be further ratcheted up. A critically important part of this effort, as I see it, is that you are leading with your National Security Investment Consultants Institute. Talk about this as a portfolio that can empower ordinary Americans who are investors to help win this war against the Chinese Communist Party, and specifically what the NSIC's role in doing that is.
Well, let's use the term portfolio because it's an investment term, something with which I'm very familiar. If you are invested in a portfolio of companies that are enabling the human rights violations and the repression of liberty in China, and you're doing it because you think you'll get a better return potentially, I've got two responses for you. Number one, it's unlikely you're going to get the better return. Let's just look at the economics. With a zero COVID policy, they're making non-economic decisions in China, and that's going to harm investors. They've harmed investors through fraud. They've harmed investors through manipulation and so forth. But your portfolio is going to be at risk if it's invested in communist China. If there is an uprising, absolutely. The second point is, why in the world would you invest in something that is going against all human decency and human rights? I mean, would you invest in sex slaves? Yeah, very profitable. Sex slavery is extraordinarily profitable, but do you feel comfortable investing in that? Well, guess what? If you're investing in communist China, you're investing potentially in weapons being aimed at our service members and at us. You're potentially investing in human rights violations, including live human organ harvesting, the enslavement of populations, religious repression. This is a terrible thing to be invested in. So the NSIC Institute helps individuals learn how to better invest by training financial advisors, stockbrokers, CPAs, financial planners who can help you divest from China and invest in things that support liberty, security, and values.
Yeah. And how can people find out more about NSIC?
Well, the best way is to watch Economic War Room at economicwarroom.com or to go to nsic.org, N National S Security I Investment cconsultant.org.
I'm a huge admirer of what you're doing there with Liberty University, let us add, in terms of the certification course and the kinds of capabilities that it will give your investment advisor, your financial manager, what have you, a pension fund manager, to make sure you're not invested in propping up and enabling our mortal enemy. We're going to be right back with more with Kevin Freeman. We'll talk about Russia and other things right after this. This is Frank Effney with the Secure Freedom Minute. At the UN Climate Change Conference in Egypt last month, the U.S. delegation led by climate czar John Kerry committed this country to assume partial responsibility for the warming of our planet and to pay what amounts to reparations for developing nations portrayed as victims of intense weather and other consequences of rising temperatures. The absurdity, to say nothing of the outrageousness of this initiative, was powerfully illuminated in a webinar yesterday sponsored by our Committee on the Present Danger, China. One of its highlights was a stunning observation. Communist China's emissions of carbon dioxide, the gas climate alarmists insist is imperiling our planet and the human race, exceed those of the United States, the European Union, and India combined. The new Congress must repudiate Team Biden's promise to pay the Chinese Communist Party climate reparations. Not a red cent. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back. We're speaking with the proprietor of the Economic War Room, a man we regard as one of the country's preeminent experts on, well, a whole host of items, but specifically the economic warfare portfolio. Economic War Room is the name of his program. You can find it at Blaze TV and CRTV, among other platforms. He's a regular here, I'm pleased to say, as well as a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, and the author most recently of According to Plan. We've been talking, Kevin, about economic warfare against communist China. Since the invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin's Russia back in February, the West has mounted, I would argue, unprecedented economic warfare against the Russian Federation. The Kremlin itself, many of its denizens, oligarchs, the central bank of Russia, for that matter. What do you think has been the results of all of this to date? And does it suggest that there are real limitations to the effectiveness of economic warfare?
Well, absolutely, there are limitations to the effectiveness, especially when your enemy, in this case, Vladimir Putin, has not only planned for it and prepared for it, but waged it himself. And so for the past decade, actually since 2008, Vladimir Putin has tried to remove himself from the impact of the traditional economic weapons we use, sanctions, cutting off from the SWIFT trading system and so forth. And he's prepared for it. He planned for it. He knew when he went into the Ukraine that we would attempt these weapons, and he made preparation to respond to that. He also has a strategic advantage in that the world needs oil, and he is a promoter of oil. And our other policies, not our directed at Russia policies, but our other policies are literally helping him by pushing the Green New Deal. And all of those things, we've reduced American energy production. We stopped the Keystone Pipeline. We've reduced our strategic petroleum reserve, which is designed for emergencies, not to get people reelected by lowering gas prices. And so the Biden energy policy has emboldened and strengthened Putin at the same time that we've been attacking him with the traditional sanctions and other economic weapons.
We've also, I think it's fair to say, Kevin, seen the European Union attempting to ratchet up the pressure on Putin with price caps on his exports of energy. Talk us through whether that's a viable factor in all of this, in light, in particular, as you say, of the world's keen interest in Putin's products, oil and gas especially.
Well, there's no question the European Union is a big consumer of Russian-produced energy, and the idea of putting price caps sounds really good if you have the enforcement mechanism. But imagine this. You as an individual, you want to go to the grocery store and you're appalled at how high the prices are. So you tell the grocery store, I'm going to put a price cap. I'm going to limit what I pay for that box of cereal. They're going to laugh at you. In the end, the world needs Putin's oil. And as a result, because of U.S. domestic policy, this is one of the weakest potential responses. It's like the British cop who carries no gun and says, stop, or I'll say stop again. How are they going to enforce it on Vladimir Putin to mandate that he lowers the price? The oil market set the price, and the oil markets have set it above the $60 that they want to place it at.
And $60, I guess, is a fairly high price at that, not as high as it can get, obviously, but considerably more than it costs Putin to produce the stuff. So even if that were somehow enforceable, it would appear as though it's still going to be viable for him to try to get his oil out of the ground. And Kevin, to that extent, where have we been in the past when people have tried, even when they can enforce price caps? Has that actually worked as a technique for controlling inflation or the pain
No.
that it causes?
No, it's never worked. Richard Nixon attempted price caps. He set price limits. It was a miserable failure. What happens is people stop producing the thing that they can't maximize their return on. I mean, in this case, there's a market for oil, just like there's a market for food and everything else. Price caps are ineffective. What is effective is increasing supply. And that's something that the Europeans are not able to do at this point, but the Americans are able to do. President Biden, if you want to stop Vladimir Putin, I mean, we covered this, Frank. You and I, we wrote a book, Putin's Reset. We talked about economic warfare. The way to beat Putin is to ramp up American energy production and make it worldwide available. These are the answers. The idea of putting an artificial price cap, it will never work. It might work for a very short period of time, and then it'll collapse.
And when you say that, Kevin, I think it's important to point out this is not hypothetical. We actually saw Ronald Reagan bring about the demise of the Soviet Union, an entity that Vladimir Putin, continues to revere and I think, frankly, seeks to reconstitute if he can, certainly a Russian empire, by drowning the Russians in Saudi oil at the time, low-priced Saudi oil, and it absolutely knocked the pegs out from under the Russians and brought about, as I say, what Putin calls the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century, namely the end of the USSR. So, I mean, you're talking about something that is not just on a theoretical level, sensible and effective, but in practice has proven to be extremely so. No?
Yeah, absolutely. But here's the thing. We are artificially limiting the supply through environmental restrictions, through the Green New Deal, with the idea of driving prices up. We're artificially restricting the supply. And at the same time, we're talking about putting limits on the price. That neither one of those can hold over time. We've got to maximize the production, let the free market do its sway. Absolutely, the history has proven the effectiveness of increasing supply to harm Russian interests or Soviet interests. This is what we ought to be doing, and President Biden has the opportunity to do it right now, today, and he's not doing it.
And for so many other reasons, of course, as well, just our national security, as well as energy security at a time when we're now facing the possibilities of real energy insecurity and shortages, blackouts and the like, brought to us in substantial measure by this, cult. We did a fascinating webinar for our Committee on the Present Danger China this week, Kevin, about what we called cui bono, CCP bono, namely the practice of, in the name of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, CO2, we would, not only disrupt our own use of fossil fuels, but insist that everybody else do the same, to the point now where, as a result of this most recent UN conference on the climate, we've now agreed to pay reparations to countries, including communist China, which it turns out is generating more of these greenhouse gas emissions, CO2 certainly, than the United States, Europe, and India combined, according to one of our panelists. So this is madness on so many different levels. Your thoughts quickly on this reparation scheme, Kevin?
Well, again, it's artificial, it's ridiculous, and it's not economic. But what we're doing in all of our energy policies, we're benefiting Vladimir Putin by driving oil prices higher because we still will need it regardless of what the Green New Dealers say. And we're benefiting communist China because all of this forces to buy solar panels that they produce or forces to buy windmills that they produce. All of it drives in support of batteries and rare earth minerals. Communist China and Russia are the beneficiaries of this policy. Stop and question, why are we pushing it then?
Well, it's a very interesting thought, and we're going to explore it a little bit further on the other side of another short break. We'll be right back with Kevin Freeman, the author of According to Plan, which is, I think, the answer to his question, his rhetorical question. We'll be right back with the answer right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. We are having an extended conversation, I'm delighted to say, with one of our favorite guests and great colleagues in the fight to secure our country and its freedoms. Kevin Freeman is his name, best known these days, perhaps because he is the proprietor of and host of a terrific on multiple platform program entitled Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman. And in addition to this program, I just have to say what Kevin and his team put together with each of these half-hour shows is a roughly 30-page battle plan, which is just of incalculable value. And you can learn much more about all of this and get those battle plans as well as the programs at economicwarroom.com. Kevin, you brought us back to China, and I just wanted to touch on a couple of other relevant topics that that have, I think, economic, among other strategic implications. The Biden administration has blacklisted, at least the Pentagon, the purchase and use of DJI drones. And those drones are now in not only the kit of Americans, military, the Interior Department, I think the Energy Department, but also countless millions of Americans across this country. And we're told that some number of them are now flying into restricted airspace in Washington, D.C. And that is considered to be a national security threat. Can you explain how it is we've gotten ourselves in a situation where our mortal enemy now has surveillance platforms and perhaps, you know, weapon systems for that matter, because they can take over not only the sensors on these aerial drones, but also commandeer them and perhaps use them to strike at targets, whether equipped with ordnance or not. Just the impact would be devastating. How has this come to pass, Kevin, and what are the implications?
Well, the answer to your question is what we see as a marketplace, our enemies view as a battle space. We saw a global economic marketplace, and the cheap supplier was China, and their government was involved in every corporation, mandating that the corporation serve the interest of the Chinese Communist Party by law. And so what they've done is essentially weaponized everything that they're manufactured. It could be the drones that you mentioned, or telecom equipment with Huawei, or it could be your toaster that could be possibly spying on you. All of these things are examples of equipment that we bought from China, assuming that they just had an economic interest. They just are a cheap supplier, and it just improves the quality of life. No, they see a geopolitical opportunity, a battle space in manufacturing equipment and goods for Americans, whether it's defense equipment or whether it's a common household toaster. This is a part of the Chinese unrestricted warfare plan. They told us they were going to do it. Anybody who was paying attention could see it, and now they've done it, and now we're suffering with potential consequences of it.
This whole SMART program, in short, Kevin, is something that the Chinese have inserted themselves into, whether it's smart meters, as you say, washing machines, refrigerators, toasters, to say nothing of drones, right? And to the extent that this is feeding a sort of big data collection system on the part of the CCP, one other aspect of this sort of line of attack against us, as you know, is this application called TikTok. Talk about what the Chinese are doing with that and the implications not only of exploitation of it for data collection and surveillance purposes, but also indoctrination.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about this. This is a bad science fiction movie where you're everything that made in China, and everything is made in China, it seems, turns on you. And TikTok is no example. The young people of America get their news from social media, and the hot top social media platform is TikTok. So not only do they collect information about all our young people, what they're looking, what their viewing habits, they get information, personal information, but also they're able to feed information, and they're able to set. Dr. Robert Epstein has shown us what Google can do with search engine results, and showing us, you Google something and it tells you, well, here's the answer. And you say, oh, that's the answer. Google says so. TikTok is now doing that with young people. What they're looking at is being fed to lead them. And it's not just, you know, it's showing cat videos. It is very sophisticated brainwashing techniques at the highest level that are capable through a Chinese controlled company. And every Chinese control company must, by law, serve the Chinese Communist Party. It really is frightening.
You know, what I've learned about it of late is that it's not just those cat videos or silly dance ones. It's that this algorithm that they use with TikTok is designed to determine what, you know, scratches your fancy. What right. is it that will keep you watching and tailoring the product to you so that you are actually addicted? And this is one of the reasons why our kids are face down in this. But Kevin, what you've just described is that to the extent that they're not only watching these videos, but they're also being fed propaganda, some of it subliminal, some of it pretty explicit, hostile to our country on the one hand, and promoting socialism or even communism, certainly China. It is a vehicle for subversion, arguably on an unprecedented scale, not only in our history, but I think in history of the world. No?
Oh, absolutely. That's why they call it digital fentanyl. But also, for the Chinese to acknowledge, they prove the point by limiting what our tech companies are allowed to do there. For example, file sharing from the AirDrop app has been cut off by Apple because the Chinese Communist Party demanded that it be cut off. They don't allow certain content providers in China on purpose because they know the power of this weapon and they're not going to be allow it to be used against their agenda or for their people. So absolutely, they're complete hypocrites in this, in that they're mandating or pushing this on our young people, but they're preventing us offering liberty, security, and values to theirs. They're shutting off the voice of America, so to speak, in China.
Yeah. Well, more to the point, they're not even showing their own people the programming that they're sharing with ours.
Of course not.
You know, instead, they're promoting, you know, achievement and academic rigor and love of country, in their case, of course, China. Kevin, this subversion point brings me to a final topic with you, and very quickly, 2 minutes or so. There is now some thought being bruited about within conservative circles that in light of, well, the serious inadequacies, shall we put it mildly, the wrecking operation, to put it more bluntly, of the Biden administration, we really just need to have, you know, red states separate from blue states and, you know, just not have to put up with the nonsense any longer. You've got some serious concerns about that, as do I. And I wanted you in particular to talk about a fellow by the name of Igor Panurin in this connection.
Yeah, so this is a buddy of Vladimir Putin who published work probably 20 years ago that said the United States was going to break up, and it's going to break up into five different countries. One of them would be the West Coast, which would be California-led, and one of them would be Texas-led in the Southwest, and one would be Upper Midwest, and one would be Northeast, and then Alaska would amazingly go back to Russia. But the concept of that was that American society is not cohesive enough. And so there have been efforts by the Russians, by the Chinese and others to divide us as a people. And I think it's extraordinarily dangerous, because if America were divided, then who would dominate the planet? The one thing standing in the way of communist totalitarianism over the whole earth is a free America. And so the idea of divide and conquer is the purpose. And I'll tell you, as a red state Texan, I find great appeal in the idea that I don't have to put up with the decisions made in blue state California or in New York or whatever. But I think that would be a travesty for America. I think we've got to return to our values. The answer is not to break up and get a divorce. The answer is to get some counseling and find mutual ground and find respect for one another, respect for my beliefs. And you know, America is not something we should give up on. It is a grand experiment that must succeed for the sake of the world.
Amen. And Kevin, I guess I just want to put a fine point on it. The idea of destroying the United States, because it is the only real impediment to the realization specifically of China's ambitions to become the great hegemon of the world, the Middle Kingdom, once again, as they say, the China dream of Xi Jinping, is only going to be advanced by this kind of talk, I would argue, let alone the actual breakup. And I mean, it's unimaginable to us, I think, who have grown up with this idea that, you know, the oceans protect us from any adversary to speak of. But, you know, we have documented in a book to which you contributed, the CCP is at war with America, how the communist Chinese have for decades had it as their purpose to depopulate the United States so it can be colonized by China. Well, we break up, you can bet, I think, that that program will be advanced as well. We mustn't let this happen, needless to say. Kevin Freeman, thank you for the great work you do at Economic War Room with the National Security Investment Consultants Institute and so much more. Again, folks, check it all out at economicwarroom.org. Come back to us again next week if you would, Kevin. In the meantime, Godspeed. We'll be right back with more with in moments. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the content of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at the American Family Network, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. Welcome back. We're going to talk about some of these issues that we discussed with Kevin Freeman and others with, well, one of the free-range thinkers, as I call him, that I admire most. His name is Dr. Scott Powell. He has been a contributor to the public policy debate in our country for decades, the author of a really important book that I came across as a very young man, that he wrote as a very young man, entitled Covert Cadre, about the phenomenon of, at the time, the Soviet Union's communist cadre in America. It's now been greatly outshone by the Chinese communists' cadre and elite-captured individuals and the like. But Scott Powell is his name, and Dr. Powell has been a fellow at the Discovery Institute and the author of a number of books in addition to Covert Cadre, including most recently Rediscovering America. We always appreciate the chance to visit with him. Scott, welcome back to Securing America, sir.
Well, that's very gracious of you, Frank. Thank you for the nice introduction.
So let me ask you, Scott, to talk about something we touched on with Kevin Freeman, just to get your perspective on it. The prospects that Xi Jinping, the Chinese emperor, newly coronated as such, might be in real difficulty, and what that might mean for us.
Well, let's hope he's in great difficulty. I think most people raised in a liberal culture, you know, in our democratic system, it's very hard for them to understand how communism really works. I liken the communist system to the mafia system. And just as the worst people get to the top, and we say the worst, we mean the most, oftentimes the most deceitful, the most conniving and thug-like people get to the top of the communist system. The worst people rise to the top. We have to recognize that Xi Jinping is probably, he probably exhibits these qualities, and he's a very dangerous man. The problem in China, of course, is that the people have no arms and no way really to overthrow the system except putting their lives at great risk. And I must say, and I think it's important for Americans to recognize that this is a very different protest than the Tiananmen Square protest. Back in 1989 in Tiananmen Square, the protest was against a particular leader. There was no protest against the Communist Party. None. This time, and there was no surveillance state back then either. So these were, you know, faceless, anonymous protesters, largely student protesters. Now we have a wall-to-wall surveillance state in China. So all these protesters can be identified and known and targeted by the state. And we have them protesting against Xi Jinping, not just the COVID, the zero tolerance, the zero COVID policies that have led to these extensive lockdowns and to death of people, but they are protesting Xi Jinping and the Communist Party. This is remarkable.
It is indeed remarkable. And as you say, especially, Scott, because they know as they do this that they're literally putting their lives on the line. And as Kevin said, it's their families' lives on the line and yes. their friends' lives on the line as well, thanks to this. I think there was a surveillance state. There was a, you know, totalitarian aspect to this going back to Mao's time. But the efficiency and right. the thoroughness, comprehensiveness of it is unparalleled in the world today. And unfortunately, it's something that they are exporting now. And the China model, as it's been called, brought to us as a response to the pandemic, has, I think, really insinuated it into our own country as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically, Scott, in connection with what we've come to call the digital gulag, if you've taken a look at that, talk a little bit about concerns we should have about it.
Well, I think we add into the contributing factors from the West, if you will, the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab, who looks to China as the model. And as far as I can make out in my reading and study of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab, they favor most, if not all, of what China is doing, because it is a new form of communist control that they want to establish. And they, first of all, they want massive population reduction, and those people that are left would just be, at the mercy of the ruling class. They would
be serfs.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You will own nothing, and you'll be happy.
You will be happy. That's right. And I want to talk with you about several aspects of this, and probably on the other side of this short break. But before we go, Scott, to the extent that you've studied closely these various forces, the Chinese Communist Party and the so-called globalists, there's a third sort of component to the various totalitarian forces we confront at the moment. I think it's fair to say the Islamists,
yes.
the Sharia supremacists, if you would.
Yes.
And I always feel constrained to say, look, we understand they've got different end states in mind, at least we think they do. But what they all share in common is a recognition that getting rid of us is necessary to the realization of their goals, and they're perfectly prepared to collaborate to that end. No?
Yeah, we have a new axis of evil now, probably more dangerous and threatening to us than any prior axis of evil in China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. I mean, these are the worst of the worst states.
And, well, an assorted supranational Islamist organizations, the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, also come to mind. Scott, as I said, I have to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to just ask, as you see this totalitarian agenda advancing, how it is translating into a really frightening new facet to this digital gulag, and that is a transhumanist component to it as well. We'll be right back with one of the smartest guys I know, Scott Powell of the Discovery Institute, right after this. Welcome back. We are visiting with Dr. Scott Powell. He is the author of Covert Cadre and more recently Rediscovering America, an essayist of considerable accomplishment and senior fellow of the Discovery Institute. And Scott, we were talking about some of these totalitarian forces that we're confronting. One of their new initiatives, it seems, in addition to sort of enslaving most of us, or what will be left when they're done reducing our population, is the idea that there will be transhuman dimensions to their new order. We had a fascinating hour-long conversation with Joe Allen, who specializes in this subject and talks a lot about it at Steve Bannon's War Room pandemic show. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on it as well. Do you make of this idea that technologies can be used to improve Homo sapiens, and to what end?
Well, I think we should start by first recognizing that technology has not improved the quality of life by most, shall we say, traditional or common sense standards. That relationships between people, while being able to text and do social media and so forth, is seemingly facilitates the communication, but most people recognize also that there's a real downside, that there's a depersonalization that has come with technology. And so if that's our starting point, then I would add to that, that, you know, as we are created in the image of God, we have an intelligent designer, if you will, who created us to live a very full life. And that's not just to be worker bees. It's not just to be living in our mind, coming up with new ideas. That's important. But it's also, you know, we live in our heart. We're creative, just as God was a creator and we're created in his image. We are to be creators. We're not to be automatons. My image of a transhumanist revolution is creating an army of automatons who will be at the mercy of the controllers, the state.
Programmers.
Absolutely, the programmers. Yes, you got it. That's it.
And to the extent that this really is at odds with, you know, the values, the Judeo-Christian values notably, but the values more generally of freedom and personal responsibility and the pursuit of happiness and the like, that are, you know, our birthright from the founders, and they would say from God as well. This would seem to be a serious affront to the good Lord, and satanic in character, is it not?
I agree with that. I believe that, you know, we are seeing, as we've walked away from God in America, you know, we've to some extent lost that protective hand. We've lost the beneficial spiritual protection that we had through most of our history, and that space that's been vacated has come to be occupied by more demonic forces. Very clearly, I mean, we no longer are committed to protecting children. We're normalizing abnormal behavior. We're inverting so many things. Everything has become inverted almost, you know, and here we are. So we don't want to keep going down this path that has already shown us a great deal of darkness and really a bad results. I mean, we're not a more tolerant, loving people today than we were 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, or 100 or 200 or 300 years ago. We are a less sensitive. We are a less loving. We're we're not the people that we used to be. And I think everyone longs for getting back to the way we were meant to be, living a very full life.
This is the problem. Unfortunately, it's not everybody. I think many of us do, but there certainly does seem to be, especially among our elites, a desire to go a very different direction, further accelerating the phenomena that you're talking about. Let me turn to one other troubling development. I touched on it briefly with Kevin Freeman, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it as well, Scott. And I don't know if there's a formal term for it at the moment, but national divide seems to me to sort of, or divorce even, sort of describe it, where, you know, red states would congregate and blue states would separate from them. And what are your thoughts on the advisability, to say nothing of the inevitability of such an outcome?
Well, I think the fact that it's part of the debate now, if you will, it's on the table of discussion, is an indicator of how far we've fallen as a nation from where we were. I think dividing our country would be a last resort, and I wouldn't see that it would have a good result, in all honesty.
Yeah. No, I think it would be an absolute catastrophe.
I mean, we live in a dangerous world. That's probably not going to change. When we stay together, you know, there is strength in unity, and we have to have tolerance to have different opinions. I think we need to rebuild a consensus in our country about who we are as Americans. And while we have diversity of opinion and diversity of beliefs, we have a lot of common interests that is best served by staying together.
Well, this is, I think, a central point of rediscovering America, as I recall. So we ought to be about that and recognize that no one in this country certainly would benefit from this idea. Our enemies would. That's
right.
Sure.
Yes.
And those who think that they would benefit if our enemies benefit are going to be very sadly surprised, I'm afraid, by the totalitarians' practice of liquidating those who help them gain control as a first order of business. Scott Powell, we have to leave it at that. Thanks for the work you do at the Discovery Institute and for joining us from time to time. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same. And that in the meantime, you will go forth and multiply.